progressive presidents. But as you can see, Teddy Roosevelt only started along the road to reform, not bust up the trusts completely at all. And really, in some ways, doesn't even seem to necessarily be on the right side of certain issues. Nonetheless, the reforms in America have begun under Roosevelt, and as they say, well begun is half done. But even if well begun is half done, it's only half done. And Roosevelt knew that in order for reforms to really be effective in America, they were going to have to continue. And Roosevelt probably could have won a third consecutive term in the 1908 election. There was no law yet forbidding an American president to serve a third term. Washington had established that as a precedent, and previous presidents had all stepped down after their second term. But there was no reason that Roosevelt could not run for a third term, and I suppose especially since technically he was only finishing out McKinley's first term, maybe Roosevelt could have run. But Roosevelt had said that he would honor the tradition of being a two-term only president. And so in 1908, as Roosevelt has begun his reforms, the question is, what happens next? Well, Roosevelt is going to need a successor, someone to continue the what he regarded as the good work that he had done. And he, with his backing, the Republican nominee in 1908 was William Howard Taft. William Howard Taft, first of Roosevelt, seemed the ideal man to continue on the reforms so well begun. William Howard Taft had quite a record as a troubleshooter. Roosevelt had said in various places when the United States was having difficulties. For instance, he had been sent to Panama with some of the problems we had there. And even more important, Taft had been sent to the Philippines, and Taft is one of those people responsible for helping to end the Filipino insurrection in a more or less satisfactory way. And let me tell you, that was a tough situation. Taft, then, an excellent troubleshooter, tried to make the kind of man who would be a good president. He could continue his troubleshooting from the Oval Office. Taft, well-educated, Yale grad, had been successful as a lawyer and a judge, and with Roosevelt's support, Taft wins the Republican nomination. Who are the Democrats going to put up in 1908? Well, once again, William Jennings Bryan. Now, Taft had never held elective office before. He had never run a campaign, certainly no political speaker of any type. How could he possibly win against the great campaigner William Jennings Bryan? The problem for Bryan this time was that he simply had no issue. The imperialism issue, that was a dead issue altogether. The Filipino insurrection had been gone now for quite some time, and so American imperialism could not be an issue at all. And as far as domestic affairs were concerned, the fact that Roosevelt had started down the road to progressive reform, that looked like enough. And to the American people, a slow change, the kind of changes that Roosevelt had advocated, perhaps that seemed more attractive than the more radical changes that Bryan had been proposing. The Democrats did better with Bryan than they had done under the conservative Judge Alden Parker before, but Bryan still loses rather convincingly in the popular vote, 7,679,000 for Taft, 6,409,000 for Bryan. Certainly Taft has a mandate to continue the mild progressive reforms of Roosevelt. And Taft did at first continue exactly the reforms that Roosevelt had begun. Taft continues to bring lawsuits to break up the trusts and to make the trusts behave. In fact, Taft, during his 4 years, initiated more lawsuits than Roosevelt had initiated during his previous 8 years as president. Roosevelt had initiated some 44 lawsuits against the trust. Taft initiated some 80 lawsuits, and Taft took on some of the biggest companies in America, Standard Oil. Rockefeller controlled 90% of the American oil production. United States Steel controlled similar percentages, I suppose, of the steel industry. International Harvester. Likewise, Taft continued the policy of continuing to regulate the railroads, and began reforms to prevent fraud in the stock market as well, the kind of shenanigans that I had mentioned to you before in the late 19th century. But Taft was no Oh, by the way, it is during the Taft administration that we get an amendment to the Constitution that allows the income tax, yes, allows it, first attempts at income taxes were declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, and so once again, we need a constitutional amendment to do something that the Supreme Court had said the Constitution didn't allow. And so that, to many people, looked like a good progressive type of reform. We will now have our income tax, we will get in place that that high protective tariff with the income tax, that will be far more fair. But Taft was no politician. He had never run for office before, never held elective office, and he really didn't know how to handle some of these situations. Many of the reforms that he had hoped for ended up so watered down that they really didn't do any good. And even when they did do good, Taft was not the kind of man who could take credit for those reforms. You see, it's one thing to push for good legislation, but you also have to, if you're a politician, you also have to make people believe that you've done something good for them. And Taft was simply not that kind of individual. And in my opinion, this is kind of an unfortunate thing, that it's the egotist type of a politician that claims credit even for things that they don't do. These are the kind of people who are very often successful in the political realm, where quieter people who don't claim credit for the things that they do, like William Howard Taft, or don't know how to make the public realize what they've done, they often have some trouble politically. But far more trouble for Taft than either the fact that he wasn't a politician, he couldn't get done everything that he wanted to do, and that he couldn't get credit for the things that he did accomplish, far more of a problem, his deteriorating relations with Roosevelt. Roosevelt had, quite rightly, when he surrendered office, Roosevelt is the kind of figure that's larger than life, that sucks all the air out of a room, basically. And Roosevelt, quite rightly, made himself scarce to allow Taft to get himself established as president. Roosevelt took off for Africa, where critics of Roosevelt's said that they were praying for, one said that he was rooting for the lions, and another said he was praying for some lion to do its duty. They wanted Roosevelt in Africa and never coming back. Also, I think that it's that African trip where Teddy corners a bear in a tree, and the bear is helpless there, and Teddy refuses to shoot the helpless bear, and the unsportsmanlike, and then political cartoonists did cartoons of Roosevelt not shooting the bear, and we get Teddy's bear. Yeah, we get Teddy's, you were after historical trivia, there's a bit of historical trivia, that's where we get teddy bears from. Teddy's bear, these bears that after this incident where Teddy didn't shoot the bear. I don't know if it was on this African trip or not, but sometime Roosevelt's creating that teddy bear thing. But in any case, when Roosevelt gets back from Africa, he's very unhappy. He's unhappy with Taft because what Taft had done seemed to reflect negatively on Roosevelt himself. Taft had dismissed certain Roosevelt appointees to office. Taft had found him insubordinate, not getting with the program, and Teddy believed it was kind of a personal insult. I handpicked this person, you fired him, you shouldn't do that. Even more, Roosevelt was affronted by the fact that Taft had launched lawsuits against companies that Roosevelt had left untouched. Roosevelt had not launched trust-busting suits against Standard Oil. He had not lost he had threatened sometimes the trust with these kinds of things, but when Taft launched lawsuits against companies that Roosevelt had thought were behaving in themselves, this offended him. Now, Roosevelt's personality, one person said of Roosevelt, you'll have to remember that the president is about six. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but the six-year-old temperament of Roosevelt is, I suppose, that he could throw a fit when he didn't get his way. And Roosevelt began attacking Taft. Okay, and this is going to be a real problem for William Howard Taft, because what is the thing that gives him his his eminent position in American politics? It was Roosevelt. So this is kind of a behind-the-scenes administrator, not a lot of name recognition or anything else. What makes him a suitable candidate for president is Roosevelt's stamp of approval. And when Roosevelt tries to withdraw that stamp of approval, Taft has got problems. And Taft is not a politician, but he knows full well that he is going to have somebody who supports him, or he will never be able to win re-election. And if you can't get Roosevelt to support you, well, guess what? The progressive wing of the Republican Party, those people that want major changes, they're not going to support you either. And so who is Kaft going to turn to for support?
Democrats?
Possibly, but
the old dogs in the Republican Party.
That is right. Taft, naturally enough, to get done what he wants to do, he needs some support. And what we're talking about here is basically how do you get legislation through Congress and particularly the Senate. If you can't get the progressives to support the kinds of things that you want done, you go to the conservative Republicans, the old big business Republicans. And so this is one of the things about Taft. Now, I've gone through Taft very, very briefly compared to Roosevelt, but the thing to remember about Taft, as you write about him, is that Taft starts out as a progressive, starts out in the tradition of Roosevelt. In fact, in many ways, it looks like he was going to make better changes in some ways than Roosevelt does. But then Taft, because of Roosevelt undercutting him, Taft more or less goes back to the conservative side. And that's, Taft is only a sort of progressive. By the end of his term, he's no longer working with the progressive elements really much at all. Well, with the Republican Party now divided between those that support Taft and those that support the progressive tradition of Roosevelt, it's quite clear that the Republican Party, that there is a major chance for the reformers to take over that party. This is one of the things that happens in American history. You know, we focus on the big election between, well, let's say today, between Republicans and Democrats are major parties. But in general, before that, during the primary election, there'll be a decision, what direction is your party going to go? The Republican Party then is Taft nears the end of his term and is going to perhaps go in a conservative direction and perhaps in a progressive direction. But who would lead the progressive side of the Republican Party? Who would lead the effort to make the Republican Party a party of progressive reform? One major possibility was a man named Robert M. La Follette. La Follette, unlike Taft, had plenty of political experience. He'd been a congressman. He had been the governor of Wisconsin. He had also been elected to the United States Senate. In many ways, Robert M. La Follette had one of the most successful records in terms of reform. Now, not at the national level just yet, but at the Wisconsin level. When he had been, and I was just talking to Dr. Schaff about this, that both of us have a tendency to focus on the progressives as a national movement. Progressive reform actually starts at the local and state level. And figures like Robert M. La Follette are making progressive kinds of reforms in states like Wisconsin before any of this reform gets carried to the national level. In any case, Robert M. La Follette had Wisconsin laws that regulated the railroads, direct election of candidates to office, taxation of corporate property, and different kinds of progressive reforms there. La Follette begins a movement to try to get the Republican nomination instead of Taft. Taft is going to have the support of the conservative, the business Republicans here in 1912. Taft is going to say, no, we don't want to go in that direction. The Republican Party is going to be a party of progressive reform. But Roosevelt was not convinced that Robert M. La Follette was the best man to lead the progressive wing of the Republican Party. In fact, Teddy thought there was somebody better than Robert M. La Follette. In fact, a lot better than Robert M. La Follette. What do you suppose Teddy thought was a lot better than Robert M. La Follette? Well, of course, who could be better? But Teddy's got a problem here. He's got a couple of problems. First of all, Teddy had said that he would honor the tradition of limiting himself to terms as president of the United States. But this one was easy enough to work around. Teddy said, well, what I meant was two consecutive terms. I've been out of office for 4 years. I can now come back and I can run again. I'm not breaking my promise at all. But there's something else. If Teddy just throws his hat in the wing, into the ring, and elbows Robert M. La Follette aside, you know, Roosevelt has already split the Republican Party, right, between the progressives and the conservatives. And now Roosevelt had a good chance of splitting the progressive wing. And Roosevelt cannot do that. He cannot hope to get the nomination again, to get the nomination away from Taft. He cannot hope to do that if the progressives aren't 100% united behind him. And so if Roosevelt is going to get back in this race, he needs a mighty good excuse. Well, that excuse presents itself. Robert M. La Follette, while he was campaigning, passes out after giving his speech. Ooh, it was a hot day or something like that. And that is the only excuse that Roosevelt needs.
See, La Follette isn't up to the rigors of a campaign. Certainly not up to the rigors of the presidency. But me, I'm fit as a bull moose, he says.
And so so Teddy uses that as an excuse. Basically shoves La Follette aside and the progressives rally to Roosevelt's cause. 1912, Republican convention in Chicago. It's clear that either Roosevelt or Taft is going to get the nomination. Which one? Now that's a problem because there's some 250 disputed delegates. Well, we almost had that in the Democratic campaign last time with President Obama and Hillary Clinton. There were all of these superdelegates who were not elected. They were not bound to any candidate. And it was so close that the Democrats might very well have found themselves in a very, very strange situation at their convention with no clear winner. No, they negotiated that out before there was a problem with the convention. But in any case, at this time, it was clear that either Taft or Roosevelt was going to get the nomination, but who got that nomination depended on which delegates were officially recognized and which were not. Well, as the Rules Committee met, they decided again and again and again and again that in those disputed seats, it would be the Taft delegates that got the right to vote at the convention. Well, that should have settled the issue, but the progressive Republicans and Roosevelt himself were not prepared to go along with the rest of their party. Their party was going in a bad direction, so they thought, and so they simply pulled away, and they established a party of their own. The Progressive Party, but we call them the Bull Moose Party. From Teddy Roosevelt's line, I'm fit as a bull moose. The Bull Moosers have their own convention, nominate, of course, Roosevelt, and at their convention, they rally the troops. They are filled with righteous zeal. We stand at Armageddon and we battle for the Lord, they sang. And I don't know that song, but I would like to. We stand at Armageddon and we battle for the Lord. Of course, Onward Christian Soldiers, they sang, and Battle Hymn of the Republic songs that you know, and you know the martial spirit. We are fighting against all the forces of evil. And then, kind of my favorite lines from these bull moosers, I want to be a bull moose, and with the bull moose stand, with antlers on my forehead and a big stick in my hand. That's Teddy Roosevelt's big stick and the bull moose antlers. But more important than the campaign hoopla and all of that is that the Bull Moose Party stood for real reform. What kinds of things? First of all, they wanted the initiative. They wanted American citizens to be able to initiate their own laws. This is something that progressives would get in state after state, where the people can get their petitions, get their law on the ballot, and the people themselves can make laws for themselves. They also wanted the referendum. The referendum similar, but this time it's reversing laws. If you don't like a law that your state legislature has made, or if you don't like a law that Congress has made, you get the referendum. That is, you can recall that law and make it no law. The Bull Moosers also wanted recall. Politician not doing the things that they were elected to do, you don't wait for the next election, you can recall them right away. Notice that in Wisconsin right now, there are some people that are unhappy with some of the Republicans in the legislature there, and instead of waiting for the next election, it looks like either in July or in August, there is going to be a recall election to see if they are replaced or not. Arnold Schwarzenegger out in California, just, I mean, this was so strange. just after after there is an election, people in California decide that there'd be too much scandal with Democrats in office, and they have a recall election to put in Schwarzenegger. I come from California, but you know that idea that California is the land of fruits and nuts.
You South Dakotans don't know that?
Yeah, California is the land of fruits and nuts. We sure were. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Of course, Minnesota.
Minnesota, like the Jesse Ventura. So.
And Al Franken.
I don't know. Of course, we elected Bo Jackson, so I guess we got nothing to know.
Country voted Reagan.
Yeah. Reagan?
Yeah. An actor.
Good one, too. You ever watch Bedtime for Bonzo?
Well, probably.
If you watch Bedtime, you vote for Reagan.
I will not. I was at Reagan's inaugural ball in 1966. Yes, Jack Benny played the violin. You guys don't know Jack Benny. Jack Benny, older than me, one of his radio and early television. He had this violin, and Jack Benny playing the violin was always a threat. He played it. It was just all something. But the truth of the matter is, Jack Benny was a really good violinist. And he did his usual comp bit with his bad violin, and he played Korsakoff's Flight of the Bumblebee.
Rochester.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you know Jack.
Bring me my violin.
Anyway, recall. Recall judicial decisions. The courts constantly overthrowing legislation that people wanted. And if you thought that the Supreme Court had done something wrong in their decision, you could recall the judicial decision. You could overturn. They wanted workers' compensation laws. For the faculty, hey, people that have those unsafe conditions, they owe you something for it. Minimum wage for women. Women undercutting men's labor in particular by being willing to work for sometimes 70 cents a day. Factories, minimum wage for women, which of course would affect men's wages as well. Women's suffrage, this is 1912. Women still couldn't vote in most states. Child labor legislation, child labor in factories. They called for a Federal Trade Tariff Commission to regulate big business. That's the Moose platform. Well, the Bo Moosers and Roosevelt and the regular Republicans of Taft began to tear each other apart. Taft called Roosevelt a dangerous egotist and a demagogue. Roosevelt called Taft a fathead, his brains are beginning to. And this was the ideal situation for the Democrats. Now remember that in the previous 50 years, Democrats had controlled the presidency only for a total of 8 years. The two terms of Cleveland, that was it. The Republicans had dominated on the national level. It looked like the Democrats had a chance if they could put up the right sort of candidate. So who would that right sort of candidate be? The logical choice, I suppose, William Jennings Bryan, still a dominant voice in the Democratic Party, but he lost the elections. And there's something about somebody that's, even if you lose one election, it's hard to get the nomination again. Having gone with Bryan three times, it was time for a fresh face. Democratic convention, 45 ballots without producing a winner. Who do we choose? Who do we choose? Who do we choose? And finally, Bryan threw in support to a relative unknown, a man named Thomas Woodrow Wilson. With Bryan's support, Wilson gets the Democratic nomination. Woodrow Wilson, distinguished scholarly background, even more distinguished, in fact, far more distinguished than Roosevelt. He had an undergraduate degree from Princeton. He had a PhD from Charles Hopkins. How about that? history, Bryn Mawr, law and economics at Princeton. He'd become president of Princeton University. Real academic. He had written a lot of stuff on history, including an excellent biography, at least excellent in some sense, of George Washington. He had also written the history of America, and we were giving away a complete set of Wilson's history of America over in the library. I got one of my history majors to latch onto it. I'm in a way sorry that I didn't. Not because it's the best history of America, but because of the insight into how Wilson viewed American history at that point. But certainly studies in law and economics and history is the right academic background. Wilson also had elective experience. In 1910, he had been persuaded to run for governor in New Jersey. New Jersey was a state controlled by political machines in the same way that New York was controlled by Kennedy society. And interestingly, Wilson was a choice of the political bosses. They thought that this academic egghead, this Princeton University president, they'd just lead him around by the nose. They were wrong. Wilson, it turned out to be very, very independent of political bosses. He was a very, very effective speaker. Somebody said that you could waltz in his speaking, and I am not sure exactly what his speaking style would be that you could waltz to. I don't know what that would be, but it was certainly quite effective as far as that was concerned. And he used his ability to speak well to draw attention to progressive causes. In New Jersey, Wilson succeeded in getting progressive legislation every bit as effective as that of Loftlet in Wisconsin. Things like the workers' compensation laws, regulation of utilities, and things like that. Wilson then was a true progressive, fairly effective progressive, a man who could translate ideals into practice. 1912 campaign was an exciting one. Taft, no speaker, but Wilson and Roosevelt certainly were, and Bryan was still available to campaign on behalf of Wilson. Eric was mentioning a second ago that what happened here is that passions were so high that somebody finally took a shot at Roosevelt. I didn't realize this. Eric says that what happened is that the bullet was slowed down because his speech was so thick. I did not know that, but in any case...
He had it in his breast pocket, you know, and I guess they shot him on his way to his inaugural speech.
In any case, Roosevelt finished his speech, even though he'd been shot, he finished up his speech, even with a bloody shirt, and it took only 2 weeks off the public. Anyway, beyond the surface excitement of something else, change was in the air. Because it became apparent very, very quickly that Taft was not going to win, and that you were going to get one progressive or another. Either Wilson, the progressive leader on the Democratic side, or the Volloosers were going to pull a great upset in. Third party was going to have its candidate as the president of the United States. Ultimately, what happened is that Wilson won 41% of the popular vote, Roosevelt 27% of the popular vote, Taft 23%, and interestingly, the Socialist Party won 6%. 6% vote for the Socialists shows how much the American people in that particular election were ready for change. The conservative candidate Taft got only a total of 23% of the vote, time for major changes. In the Electoral College, that was overwhelming for Wilson, 435 votes, even though he only won 41% of the popular vote. Fewer votes than Bryan had won, but the votes split up multiple ways. Wilson gets a convincing victory in the Electoral College. The results of the election were rather fortunate for many people, or so seen. Taft was relieved, and there is a famous picture of Taft as Wilson is coming into the White House, and Taft is leaving, and Taft is just beaming. He has this tremendous smile on his face. He goes on later to be a Supreme Court Justice. For Taft, being president, being finished with being president was great. Wilson, of course, has won his great victory, and now he can make his progressive reforms. Roosevelt, a rich man, he's not going to lack for things to do. And for the, Brian, by the way, gets a nice consolation prize. Brian becomes Secretary of State under Wilson. And for the American people, well, we get a real reform. And I'm going to take a few minutes and go through Wilson's reforms pretty quickly. What kind of reforms? First of all, tariff. Cut from 40% to 29%. Replacing the tariff as an income source, an income tax, 1% income tax on incomes above $4,000, and an additional 1% to 6% on higher incomes. And it always is amusing to look at that first income tax and how low the rates are, and to realize that the income tax, you know, $4,000 a year, that's almost 10 times the average annual wage, and it's only 1%, and the richest people in America only an additional 1% to 6% initial income tax, that very, very a lot. Also, Wilson pushes through Congress a Federal Reserve Act. This is very early in his first term, 1913. Federal Reserve Act establishes our Federal Reserve System. I am going to talk to you in more detail about the Federal Reserve System later. In fact, I think I'll probably bring in Dr. Newman if he's available to talk about the Federal Reserve System. This is a complicated issue that's extraordinarily important to understand, but we get our Federal Reserve established under Wilson. We get a Federal Trade Act under Wilson in 1914. Federal Trade Act sets up a Federal Trade Commission to investigate corrupt dealings in among businesses and things like that, to investigate price fixing and other kinds of shenanigans. The Sherman Antitrust Act was strengthened by a new Antitrust Act, the Clayton Antitrust Act. This forbid price discrimination. You couldn't do what, you know, Rockefeller had insisted that the railroad companies give him one a price lower than all his competitors. No, you could no longer negotiate, you know, your prices, your price. No price discrimination. Other kinds of practices, corrupt business practices, forbidden by the Clayton Antitrust Act as well. Wilson got laws limiting child labor in the factories. No one under 14 could you hire to work in those factories anymore. Certain industries, we got an 8-hour day established, particularly in industries where that 8-hour day was necessary for safety, like railroads. You don't want a railway worker working 9, 10, 11, 12 hours a day, because that's what leads to accidents and to deaths. A Workman's Compensation Act, a national, now this had been done on state level before, but now a national Workman's Compensation Act under Wilson. A Seaman's Act, now one of the most hazardous of workplaces was on board a ship. Yes, factories were dangerous. Working on ships was sometimes even more dangerous. A Seaman's Act established safety requirements for people working in a merchant marine fleet. Not only that, Wilson got legislation to set up vocational and agricultural schools, trying to increase the, well, give American workers more training and more abilities in various areas. At the same time that Wilson was getting this legislation on the national level, there was much progressive legislation on the state level as well. States like South Dakota passing, actually South Dakota had done this even earlier, but passing it. Dakota may have been the first state in the country to have the initiative. That is, you know, people make their, I'll have to look that up. But South Dakota was certainly among the leaders in many of these kinds of progressive reforms. Well, Wilson then, a progressive president, a man who had kept his promises to the American people. All of this a real victory for the progressives? Well, all of Wilson's achievements came crashing down as a result of his failure to keep one promise, a promise that he wanted very much to keep, but found himself unable to keep. And I will talk about that failed promise in our next exciting lecture. And I will talk to you a little bit about your examples.